Welcome to We Mentor Mondays with Nancy podcast. Get inspired. Break through to new dimensions with your entrepreneurial peers on the journey of self-leadership mastery and life success. Reinvent or evolve yourself as you redesign your business. Dual innovation. Take charge of who you next become. Feel more deeply to think, act, lead, and mentor more clearly and more effectively. Learn something new from our conversation today.
Nancy, you're a fantastic person. You've done 30 years. You've learned an awful lot from the 30 years that you've been doing your We Mentor. That starting the podcast in 2016 was very innovative. I think also the way that you talk about how to manage a family with managing a small business, I think this is very valuable for the ladies that are out there. It's a very difficult thing to do, to run a business, let alone run a business while you're trying to bring up a child. And you've proven over and over again that you can do this. People can do this. So don't give up. Follow Nancy's inspiration here and go for it.
Welcome to We Mentor Mondays. I'm Nancy, and today we're going to kind of switch the mic around. So I've asked John Patching, who's an experienced life coach, meditation tutor, and holistic therapist. He does spiritual therapy for the serious soul. His success lies in developing a very trusting, open, and profoundly caring rapport with his clients. John places great emphasis on uncovering the causes of a client's issues to achieve lasting, successful outcomes. So he believes in helping his clients master their mental processes to become the best version of themselves. His name might be familiar to you because he has been behind the mic before. So he has worked with the Wallner family, where I did an 8-part series, and I'll include those podcast conversations in the episode resources. And he was helping their family transition during a time in which their son became a daughter. So she was going through that transition, and it's an amazing family who did a lot of work. And John was instrumental in helping them transition together as a family to really accept and understand each other. And he's also been behind the mic talking about his intrinsic self practice. And we also talked about what was going on in Europe for small business. Do you remember that, John?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, that seems a long time ago, though.
Yeah, well, that was just in 2021, I think.
In the beginning of 2021.
Yeah, you were here in the United States in 2019, so you and I got to know each other then. But you've been bugging me ever since to, you would like to be in charge of, you know, asking me some more in-depth questions so the audience can get to know me as the person behind the mic.
Totally. And I think it's very appropriate to do it this year because this year, Nancy is celebrating 30 years of We Mentor. So, yeah, Nancy.
30 years. Woohoo!
Woohoo! So this time, Nancy, you're the one that's speaking and I'm the one answering the questions. How do you feel about that?
As long as you're not going to roast me, I'm fine.
Well, I'm not into a roast tonight. I quite fancy a mixed grill with a little bit of sauce.
Great. Okay. So John and I are talking through WhatsApp, and where in the world are you?
I'm in Oxfordshire in the UK, and it's in the evening for me, so it's the morning for you. And I want to actually first explore with you, Nancy, exactly who you are. So I'd like you to introduce yourself, who you are personally, and then where you're from. So we all know you're from Minnesota, but where did you grow up? And a little bit about your business, We Mentor, please.
Okay. When we were talking about this, I was thinking, yeah, who am I? And what came out for me is kind of what comes out for other guests, too, is words and phrases, descriptor terms. So I put adventurous, fun, and gracious, courageous and compassionate, resilient, creative, and loving, and always evolving as an entrepreneurial leader and spiritual human being. And I love meaningful conversations. So I grew up in small town America in Minnesota. So multiple generations of my both parents' sides of the family have grown up in kind of the west central part of Minnesota in a dairy farm community. And my dad and mom, my dad founded a couple businesses before he eventually started or bought a dairy farm in a very tiny town of Parker's Prairie, Minnesota. And there's six of us siblings, and my youngest brother, Paul, was born, the only one born on the farm. So I was entering seventh grade when I started learning about the practice of dairy farming.
Wow. So we've got a little farm girl here. That's great. So do you know how to milk a cow?
Oh, you bet. It's changed a little bit. They still do milk machines, but we had the type of milkers that were, you went in between the cows and there was a faucet that you would plug in for, you know, a spigot for air. Yeah. And so anyways, yeah. Did a lot of chores.
I don't know
about
that. I know how to milk a cow by hand, but that's it.
So, oh, okay.
You're a bit more advanced than I am. Yeah. So can you tell me a bit about We Mentor then and what you do?
Yes. So I founded We Mentor in 1992 after I was 29, going on 30 at the time. And I acquired a Bachelor of Arts degree in elementary education and a master's degree in special education. And I had worked both in regular education and then I continued as I got my master's degree to move into kind of a more focused area of a treatment center for children with severe emotional and behavioral difficulties and
wow.
Worked there. Yeah.
Wow. So, that's difficult, isn't it? I mean, that's a very demanding job.
Yeah, and the last year that I taught in that kind of a setting, I was recruited to help with developing a special ed program that was a feeder program in the school district for other schools with adolescents who were having severe emotional and behavioral difficulties in their families. So it was,
That's a big change to go from that, though, to We Mentor, isn't it?
Yes. It was a big change. After I left teaching, I had a number of different, I've always done a lot of, I did about 30 different types of jobs before I started We Mentor. And I always had more than one job at the same time. So I had a full-time job and was either working on my master's degree or while I was working on my master's degree, I had a full-time job and a part-time job because I paid as I went, which you can't do right now. With education, you know, fees the way they are. But that's how I paid for my graduate school. Yeah, so I had worked in the insurance industry, life insurance. I went through training for that. I became the number one salesperson in the country for the Minnesota Special Olympics in telemarketing and bringing in funds. And I was a nanny, and I also worked as a nurse's aide in a retired nursing home for folks both in Parker's Prairie and Alexandria. I don't know. I just had a lot of different jobs. I worked at a computer company selling laser printers.
So, ladies and gentlemen, we've got a very hardworking chick here that has quite a lot of experience around the world. Lots of jobs.
Yeah, lots of jobs. Love sales. And I guess I felt like the skills that I learned along the way were really applicable when I started We Mentor because I needed some education and teaching experience. I needed writing curriculum experience. I needed sales experience, and I needed to understand cash flow, which was the hardest thing and has always been the most challenging for me to understand and not work with, but just figure out, you know, how to grow a business. I've always been focused on that. And then I eventually was hired to teach at St. Mary's University because I had a curriculum in entrepreneurship. And so I taught there for 13 years while I ran We Mentor, and then also at St. Catherine University. I was there for 3 years in developing entrepreneurship programming, like with the University of St. Thomas and St. Kate's. They would have elevator pitch competitions and hands-on activities that would help students understand how to you know, bring money in and do presentations and sell what they have created. So lots of stuff.
Great.
It's been fun.
Lots of stuff. Okay. So I want to find out a bit more about your who you are before we go head on deep into WeMentor. So I want you to imagine that it's Armageddon and you've got a massive tornado coming straight towards your state and everybody is running for their lives. You've got tsunamis coming in at the coast. You don't know where you're going to be after this. And you've got the chance to pick up five things from your house. What five things would you pick up and why?
Wow. Well, I was first thinking about the people that I would grab.
And picking these five things up, that could be instrumental to saving these people. So what five things would you grab?
Water, a lantern, blankets, mm-hmm. matches, and pillows, and food. Forget the pillows, food. Let's see. So I said the lantern, the matches, water, food. What else did I say? Yeah, so five or six.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you would bring these particular things because?
Well, because when a tornado comes through, you don't know, you know, how long you're going to be down there. And also, if the house, like I'm assuming I would make it down into our cellar area, and if our house collapsed on us, it would take a while to get out. And I would have my cell phone. Mm-hmm. Probably a radio. Okay. I can keep going.
It's quite sensible what you're asking. That's really good. Yeah, great. I mean, it's not exactly what I would pick. I think I would have a tarpaulin and my flint and steel. I would have a torch. I would have a blanket. And I would bring with me something like a sharp knife.
Oh, a sharp knife. So, sure, to open things.
Sharp knife.
What were your first two items? What were your first two items?
Flint and steel and a tarpaulin.
What's that?
What, a flint and steel?
Yeah.
It makes fire. So basically, a metal rod, which is the steel, and then a piece of flint that you strike down the rod, and it gives you a spark.
Oh, yeah.
And it never. So basically, you know, your matches will run out, but this flint and steel never will.
Yeah. Oh, very cool. Yeah. Okay.
My bit of being a scout.
Yeah.
And the tarpaulin, because, you know, you can always find moss and grass and stuff to keep you warm, but what are you going to find to keep you dry?
Yeah, yeah. Is that a question?
As long as you can make fire and you can keep warm with the tarpaulin or the blanket and the tarpaulin, then you can survive.
Yeah.
And if you have a knife, then you can cut things. And you only need a piece of stone and a bit of oil or something, which you can probably scavenge to keep your knife sharp.
Yeah. Excellent. All right. That was fun.
Well, we do know that Anansi is very practical in the things that she brought. That's really good. Okay, then. So you talked a bit about what you did before WeMentor, but how exactly did you come to start WeMentor? What was the thing that happened initially that made you go from all those lovely jobs to the thought of WeMentor and then creating this?
Well, I had a really tough year of teaching special ed at a middle school, and I found that I didn't feel safe, which, as it turns out, the last day that I was there, a student was really off, and I felt intuitively like something was up. And so I went to the principal and said, I need you to do a locker search. And so they did a locker search, and they found a knife in his locker. And I felt like it was for me. And that just kind of reinforced that, you know, there weren't enough safety protocols. Sometimes people don't understand the degree of, you know, when you're in danger or when someone else is dangerous.
Yes.
And I felt during that entire year, I kind of felt that I wasn't feeling safe in my job. These people didn't understand. I felt like the staff didn't, just the administration wasn't understanding the degree. You know, like what I experienced in a residential treatment center is everybody had specific training on children who could be violent. And so we had protocols in place and safety features. And even though I got my ribs cracked at one point when I was in the residential, working in the residential treatment center, I felt we were as safe as we could be. So I just felt like it was a dangerous profession. And so I had been thinking about, you know, what could I do outside of teaching and on my own? Because I grew up in an entrepreneurial environment. I really like the opportunity, you know, like when my dad went to work, right? He went, you know, from the house to the barn. You know, so I learned how to work outside the home and inside the home. And I just kind of thought that would be, you know, if I could work that out, that would create a safe environment for me to be able to do my work. While I was, you know, teaching, I put a flyer in the apartment complex that I was living, and I put up a sign for typesetting and word processing. It was just at the time where Microsoft came out with the word processing software. And I had just learned that, and I thought it was like brilliant. And so I thought, well, maybe, you know, I could do typesetting and word processing. So I got all kinds of different projects. And then I realized, oh my gosh, I'm behind the computer now all the time. You know, on the weekends, it was, you know, a lot. So I thought, you know, I'm more people oriented. And so anyways, that was another piece of information that I knew, you know, learned about myself of, you know, that I needed a lot of people connection and not just, you know, computer work.
Yeah, sure. Okay, as we all go through life, we have a lot of funny things that happen to us. Lots of experiences. So can you give me three humorous experiences that have happened to you?
Yes. So I was on my way to do my dissertation, to defend my thesis. You know, at a master's level, you don't write a dissertation, you write a thesis, which is shorter.
Yeah.
And I was really nervous, and I went through a stoplight. I don't know why I took this weird way of getting over to the University of St. Thomas. And I ended up getting my car, like, hung up in the middle of the street. There, I don't know, was a cement block, and it had this prong on top, like a huge, you know, like something, like a sign was in this, you know, where this big steel pole was. Anyways, it was short enough, so I drove into it. I couldn't back up. My car was kind of teetering on that little
thing. So you're telling me that you drove onto a post and got yourself stranded on a concrete block?
Pretty much. And so then I'm like, oh my God. So this is before cell phones, and this was in the early 80s. And I ran to a phone booth and I called my professor. And she said, I don't care what the reason is for why you're late, you still need to get here. And I'm like, okay, I'm grabbing a taxi. I'll be right there. So I defended my thesis, I got my master's degree, and went back and kind of retrieved my car. And thank God there was a gas station that was close by, so some guys helped me out.
So they lifted your car off this concrete block? Is that what you're saying?
Pretty much. You know, it's funny because when I was reflecting on this, I thought, oh, I had that happen when I worked out for a summer in the Grand Teton National Park in Wyoming. And I did the same thing at a gas station only, where I drove over the stump and they, you know, same thing. It's just weird that happened to me twice. You know, usually these kinds of things just happen once.
So the moral of this story, ladies and gentlemen, is when Nancy's driving, you make sure you're on the inside of the sidewalk.
Exactly. Especially when I'm nervous. Oh my God.
So what's your next funny experience?
This one has to do with the podcast. I don't know. I've had some really funny things, and Mike, who's behind the mic next to me handling the sound, he will remember this too. We laugh so hard. A photographer was scheduled to tape a conversation, and we tape in my lower level of my house. And this was a prior client, so she knew me quite well, and I knew her quite well. And she had a photo shoot outside in nature, and she walked through a swamp. And so when she got here, her shoes were soaked, and so she could take her shoes off, but her socks were soaked. So she asked me if I would dry her socks.
Not only were they soaked, I expect they stank as well.
Yeah. And then when we got behind the mic to talk, she was all just became super, like, she just was out of sorts. And so we then didn't even get a podcast conversation out of it.
So all you ended up doing was drying her socks and then saying, hey, you know, thanks for that experience.
Yeah, exactly.
Great. Oh, you like smelly socks then.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, my God. Yeah. And so the other one that has to do with the podcast is I had a professor come here, and he's actually a scientist and has a lab coat. And Mike was going to do the picture. And he said, well, people like to see me in a lab coat. And I'm like, oh, okay. We'll just, he said, I have one in my back seat. And I said, oh, great. Okay. So he goes and grabs it, and it's all like wrinkled and bunched up. And he said, well, it just needs to be ironed. Could you iron it for me?
Nancy, you're starting a laundry service. If I'd have known this in 2019, I would have brought my washing.
Oh, my God. So needless to say, I did not iron his white coat. And so therefore, we took a couple other pictures, types of pictures. Oh, God. That was so funny.
Oh, dear.
Yeah.
So talking about podcasts then, what gave you the idea of doing your podcasts?
In 2015, we did a summer vacation, and we thought we'd drive out to the Grand Teton National Park. I could show Matthew and Olivia, who was a teenager at the time. Let's see, it was 6 years ago, so she's turning 20, so she was 14. And then we were going to go through Yellowstone, which was further north. And so we got up into the areas of Nebraska, way the northwest corner, and we couldn't get any radio, and it was a long drive. And Matthew had just downloaded some podcasts, like one of them was On Being with Krista Tippett and a bunch of sports shows. And he plugged in his podcast, and it was so enjoyable, our trip. Just listening, interference, or, you know, a lot of advertising. It was just no interruptions. It was delightful. And I said to Matthew, oh my gosh, this is it. I had been looking for a medium to do something that would be outside of, I was teaching, I had been teaching part-time as an adjunct professor, both at St. Kate's and St. Mary's University. And when that was finishing up, I wanted another medium where I could reach people. And so this became it. So I came back and looked up the research. I got the first WordPress website for podcasters that they ever published.
Wow.
And then Mike, he was part of our French African community, Catholic community, and he was a musician. And we had a great rapport and good friendship and great families and really connected and performing together. And I said, I'm looking for an audio and video. And Mike said, I work at the U of M. I mean, I would love, you know, to do a podcast with you. And so that's how we started. We put together five shows, and we launched the last week of January 2016.
And you've been working with Mike all that time, yes?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Great. Well done. What a team.
Yeah. Excellent. Yeah. We first initially started and said, we just wanted to make a difference for a few people. And, you know, now we're, you know, over 165,000 downloads. So
that's incredible.
Yeah. Kind of steady growth.
Yeah. So what is it that you bring to your podcasts as well as just being an in?
I'm always searching for stories that can enlighten us about what life is like as a small business owner. And how meaningful can I make the conversations where people feel comfortable enough where they can share their authentic selves?
Good, good. I'm very aware that when people speak in front of the mic, they sometimes get very nervous, but this triggers feelings inside them. And when they're talking, sometimes the conversation or the topic can really cause emotion in the person. When this happens and maybe they crack up or get very upset, how do you deal with these conversations and these situations?
Well, I have each guest mentor fill out a self-awareness mentoring journal. So they identify what they're feeling, and we talk a little bit ahead of time before we go on the mic of how they're doing. I had a guest who had a very complicated story, and I thought I understood how complicated it was. I had figured out how to walk through it, and so did she. But then it was in person. The more we talked, there were like so many layers, and I realized that it was good for her to have an audio of what her experiences were, but it's not something I could air.
Okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think my rule of thumb that I always tell guests is don't tell a story that you haven't emotionally worked through yet.
That's good advice. That's great. So you are very aware of the individuals that you are interviewing, as well as the content of what you actually want to broadcast. That's great. And I think it's a very good practice to make sure that you help your interviewee feel at home and comforted and supported during some of these interviews. Because I know when I was doing a particular interview with you, Nancy, we were exploring my life, and I remember it being a very difficult topic. And it was only when I spoke to you during the interview that I realized a lot of the dynamics that I hadn't actually worked through. And it was in talking to you that I realized I had more work to do on myself. So thank you for being so understanding for myself and for a lot of other people that have been your interviewees.
Thanks, John. Yeah, you're welcome. I really do focus on that. I just feel like when I want the person to feel like they're in control of their story.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that's very important. So have you ever been turned down by a guest? And how did this make you feel?
Many times. When I'm talking about this, I'm thinking in terms of, you know, so many times business owners, we need the term level up. You're trying to navigate into like where you start in the marketplace isn't necessarily where you stay, because you don't know exactly where the market is and you don't know where the money is. And so when you get into the market and you see kind of where the money is, because, you know, there's these invisible walls that become or roadblocks to money that aren't visible when you initially go in. And figuring out who you're working with can change. So if I think in terms of leveling up for We Mentor with the podcast, I didn't want to have just famous guests on the podcast. Yeah. I wanted to have people who had maybe not told their story publicly before, like the Wallners, and what their transition was like as a family and as a business owner, family business, as their dynamic and their family dynamic changed. But so I'm always focused on when we're, okay, I just lost my little thought there. What I'm trying to say is when we're leveling things, it takes a while to get to the next level. And because it's like when you started, you're trying to figure out, you know, where the money is going and who's going with it. And so I've asked some famous people to be guests, and they haven't turned me down. But like Dr. Melanie Joy is a therapist who's an international phenomena in her groundbreaking work on powerarchies and just the vegan lifestyle and how we've been trained about what we eat. And so she was someone who, you know, has won awards and is nationally known. And so she came on my podcast. So I kind of get the no's and yeses.
Maybe personal life.
I kind of reflect at the end of each year on the guests as I'm picking the most popular, you know, the ones, the biggest, the most amount of downloads or listen to episodes, and I put them together. And then I take a look at what I've learned from each conversation as well. So I would say I learned something from every speaker, every guest mentor. And so I narrow down the lessons at the end of the year. But last year, like Dr. Melanie Joy was huge in my understanding about what being plant-based is and how I'm more aware of like how terrible the options are for what we're eating. I mean, sometimes I go to a restaurant and even lettuce salad, you know, you can't get it, you know, without cheese on it. So
that's a bit difficult for a vegan like you are.
Yeah, well, that's why we have like a 95% rule. So sometimes, you know, when there's no other options and you're really hungry, you're going to move into the 5% area where you're going to eat something that was killed. And that's okay.
You know. So how long have you been vegan?
So January 15th of 2022 was our 1 year anniversary. And we've had milestones where Matthew, Olivia, and I have said, do we want to keep going? And now it's just, why wouldn't we? We feel good. And it just creates a level of awareness and also promotes a lot of conversations, like how people are eating, what they're eating, and people are always giving us their take on what their diet is because it affects us morally. And so we're more apt to have our strong feelings about it.
Yeah. Okay, so I love your interviewing style and how you dig down into the topic of the podcast, but you also bring a lot of your own personal understanding and character into that. So I want you to tell me more about yourself. So my question was, do you have a family? And you've already touched on that because of Olivia and Matthew. So tell me about your family and if there's anybody else, any other family member that's close to you that you see regularly.
Yeah, that changed with COVID. But so yes, I've got Olivia. She was just on the podcast for the first time a couple episodes ago. And Matthew, my husband, and I we started dating when I was 35, and he's 6 years my junior. And we got married 4 years later, and then I had Olivia just shy of a few months of my 41st birthday. And so I can say, you know, what was We Mentor like before I became a parent? I ran it differently than afterward. Because your priorities,
okay,
you know,
nice to explore. I mean, how is it running a business, you know, when you're pregnant and when you've got a child? I mean, that must be very difficult.
Yeah. So let's see. I started in 1992 and Olivia was born in 2000. I had started also a entrepreneurs investment club, and I had picked 10 clients that they had been working with me for 3 years. And I asked them to be part of the club. And so we had a certain amount we would invest. And at that time, I got the idea. There was a book that was called The Beardstown Ladies, and they had formed an investment club and were touting like 23.4% on returns, which was outperforming. Like even the veteran bankers were like, oh my God. And it was a group of 16 women, and the average age was like 70. And they started running this club and they wrote this book about it. And so anyways, I decided that I wanted in 97 to start this investment club. And so I used some of the rules and we all became co-partners and we divvied up the portfolio I don't need to go into the details, but I wanted to learn more about the stock market and I wanted to do it with people that I trusted. And then we interviewed a stockbroker because I knew that we have good intentions as business owners, but our priority is our businesses and our families. And so whatever little time you have left over, I don't know that people were, you know, going to be looking at stock portfolios. And so I thought if we had a stock broker at each meeting that we trusted, that he could bring in some ideas. And my job was to facilitate the conversations and make them happen. So anyways, we were running this, you know, I was running this club along with We Mentor for running groups for We Mentor. And also, I don't think I was meeting in, I was meeting, that's right. Yeah, I was meeting with individual clients at the time. And then I taught a couple classes at St. Mary's for the year. And when I became pregnant, I started shifting my business. I hired 3 people, an administrative assistant, a salesperson, and then someone to help me with the office stuff. I always had a bookkeeper, but I needed 3 kind of full-time. And I said, if we reach our goals by the time Olivia's born, you can stay on. If we don't, you're all going to be fired.
That's a bit harsh.
Well, that's the risk I was taking. And as it turned out, we didn't make the goals. So I had to let them go because I couldn't cash flow everybody and raise an infant. And so I changed the model of my business, you know, downsized it a little bit. And then I brought Olivia everywhere. So I was at investment clubs, running investment clubs. And then I would run to the bathroom and nurse Olivia. And then everybody would take turns holding her. During the meeting, or I had a manufacturing company, a plastics manufacturer company that I was working with and in Wisconsin. And I drove out there and we would plan a longer period of time, like we would add on an hour. And then with the knowing that I would need to nurse in between. And so we had the meeting in the conference room. And then when I needed to nurse, we were at their office. So they had some other things that they did. And I remember being at St. Mary's University. I had Olivia in a stroller and brought her into the staff meeting, and it was also for adjuncts. And they were brainstorming some new coursework for entrepreneurship or a new designation or something. Yeah, I think it was a master's in business in entrepreneurship or something. I don't remember. Anyways, it had something to do with entrepreneurship and coursework. And she cried during that meeting. And then I brought her out and realized, okay, that was the last meeting that she would be at. So parenting helped me to kind of pivot with my business and, you know, just keep adapting. Whatever would work for our family is how I adapted. And I've always kept We Mentor going. It's fluctuated a lot in how much I've been earning.
Mm-hmm. So what advice would you give to women that have a young child that are business?
I would say, you know, set the priority for your family and know that your child's needs are going to continue to shift, and which means that the amount of time that you're working. So get back up, get someone to help more. I've been good with that in one way and not in another. So I would suggest, getting some extra help in and figuring out the cash flow part. How can you, because parenting is time consuming and the needs of the child, they vary. And so you'll have your schedule figured out for a few months. And then, you know, just as you've got it scheduled and things are working, then all of a sudden the child's development takes over and now you shift again. So, and I have not seen that not change.
Wow.
Yeah. So shift
now
family.
Now Olivia is a lot older and at college. You obviously have a little bit more time to yourself. So what is it you like doing in your personal and spare time?
I have been a long yoga advocate and meditation guru. So I really do that, work that into my daily schedule and daily walks. And love spending time with Matthew. He and I used to do yoga together on Sundays, which took the place, that was kind of our spiritual experience on Sundays, which we're not doing anymore, but he's teaching yoga. So yoga is a big part of our life. We're probably going to, you know, move into some retreats now, and love walking. I'm an avid reader and I like to write a lot. So I'm writing a book right now and really working hard on that. And I love spending time with Olivia. You know, that's what I also love about parenting, which I hadn't thought about. You think about, you know, all the other things involved with adapting, but our kids bring us into so many different worlds and you meet so many different people that you never would have met otherwise. And so I've always appreciated that. And we had the philosophy of, when we volunteer, we all plug in. And so when Olivia really started getting into chess when she was, you know, in second and third grade, Matthew was a prior chess player in the same school district, and he was trained by the founder of the chess club in Robbinsdale. And so he really got into it, and then there was an opening to really expand the program, and then I jumped on board. And so we built the club from 45 students to 180. And I worked with administration and the teachers to kind of get their participation and worked really hard with the parents, and that was really fun. So we did that, and then we trained two other parents and passed the club on to them. And they've they've trained some state champions.
Wow, you really are a leader, both in your business and personal life, aren't you? Nancy.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah. So how have you grown as a person since being an entrepreneurial leader, and how has this influenced your business?
Well, I think starting We Mentor really helped me embrace my entrepreneurial side. And I felt the visible walls and the invisible walls. When you're a leader, you don't know when you're going to run into problems until you launch new programming. And the same with a venture. And so I've just found with We Mentor, because I own the company, I was responsible for every aspect of it. And at times, that's a hard pill to swallow when it comes to, taking responsibility for everything. But at the same time, it gave me the freedom to explore an avenue of myself that I didn't know that I had to the degree that I had. I knew I was a lot like my dad. I didn't know that I had his same kind of proponent to, start your own, explore opportunities and make a living at doing things that the work in the world that produces income for other people and for yourself.
What do you enjoy the most about being an entrepreneurial leader?
I think being an entrepreneurial leader, I like the character development that's involved. You really have to find out who you are to be able to sell what you're doing and the services that you're providing. And I think developing your character is kind of an innate part of running a business. I like developing a wide variety of competency skills and explore different ways to help entrepreneurs with their own personal growth and also their leadership and how they're developing their operational systems in their businesses. And the connection part, I really love being part of people's journeys. And some clients have turned into friends and we've been lifetime friends. And so I love becoming healthier in how I'm relating and really mindful of what mentoring is all about. So I love developing the field of mentoring.
That's great. So earlier in the conversation, you talked about target audiences and how they change. How do you feel your target audience on the whole has changed over the years?
Well, when I started, I was running like 8 to 10 groups, and I had trained facilitators to run those groups. And I was writing curriculum on the fly. Does group 5 in session 6 have the same conversation group 10 in session 2? And I was trying to develop a curriculum that I could give to all groups that would follow the process and some of the questions that went up. And what I found was I put a lot of work into working with entrepreneurs, but there's only a small, and they were all career transitioners that I worked with initially who were exploring entrepreneurship. And what I found was a lot of people would write, the focus of the curriculum was on business, ownership and what that is and how to plan for your business and how to market and really what is it like to be an entrepreneurial leader. And so having your peers talk about these things is really important. And I spent a lot of time with people with their business ventures. And when they did a run with the venture, I just was so disappointed. And I thought, well, Maybe I just need a certain percentage of people who aren't entrepreneurs to work with, who are exploring, the career of entrepreneurship but might not do it. And you can do that in an educational setting. And so that's when the opportunity facilitator said, St. Mary's is looking for, a teacher in entrepreneurship and you have a curriculum and I think it'd be great. Why don't you do it? So then I shifted my focus to all people from, 3 to 5 years in business. And have kind of stayed, and I still work with startups, but not like I used to.
Okay. It sounds to me like you develop really good rapport, and sometimes you're very energetically, and I would even say emotionally, connected to the people that you're working with. So talk to me about boundaries within your business and within coaching.
Okay. I think it's always, I've made mistakes like everyone else with boundaries. I think one of the things with being in a mentoring position is making sure you're taking care of your mental health. And sometimes you don't realize that you're needing help until you cross a line and oh my gosh, I can't believe I'm talking about that personal item in this group when, that was not, I should be doing that, privately with someone else. I think I've always been in tune with getting help, knowing when to get help, but I think it's really refined and gotten much better over the years, you know, with a lot of practice and always focusing on what's okay and what's not okay. What's okay in a group, what's okay, what's not okay, what's okay with individuals and what's not. Because the individual stuff you're negotiating together and in forming in, you know, groups, there's also you're establishing how in depth you're going to go. And I have moved the conversation from, you know, people say, well, in working with you, I didn't realize I would be talking so much about my personal self. And I said, well, they're intermixed. And I'm not just going to talk about business, what would be called a, you know, a business conversation without bringing in, you know, how this affects you on a personal level. And so,
next question really is, how has We Mentor affected your personal life and how has your family life affected We Mentor? Because you're talking here about the two of them being very interchangeable.
Yeah. And I think I had a priority, you know, to be a great spouse and to be a fantastic mother, really tuned in and connected. And We Mentor, a family needs money. And so Matthew and I have been really good with how we've worked that out. And the business has never been more important than Matthew and Olivia. And frankly, I've had a small family, so I think a person can, it's a little, based on what I've experienced with other people managing, you know, and raising more kids, I feel like I've been able to grow the way I've wanted to grow, and that's okay. But I think with more kids, it would be harder to do both.
Do you think a business is a extension of your character, an expression of who you are, or do you feel a business is completely different and you should cut off from it any kind of character that you are?
Well, it's kind of like a therapist. I just don't think you can, you know, turn off being a therapist when you've got a lot of insight. It's just figuring out, you know, based on certain environments that you in, how you shift yourself. You know, am I collaborating now? Do I need to lead this conversation? Do I need to add this in or do they need to figure this out themselves? Or so, you know, I want to use the skills that I've gained in mentoring others to really apply them to my family, you know, life. But I'm very aware that they're very interwoven and they're also separate at the same time.
Right. So in the last few years, unfortunately, we've had COVID and it's caused a lot of distress among small business owners. In fact, some small business owners now don't have a business. So I want to ask you, how have you coped over the last few years of COVID and how has this affected your business?
It's dramatically affected my business in my ability, like my bandwidth. When all your clients are, you know, going through the same thing you are personally and in your business, and we're all doing it at the same time, I mean, it was very intense. I can't remember ever having the emotional intensity in all facets of my life at the same time. It was very difficult, but I did punt. And I spend, you know, I invested the energies where I could, and I had you as a backup. I mean, you and I really developed a really good rapport with each other to help each other through. So thank you for that, John.
Well, thank you. You've helped me a lot as well. So it's great to have such a good rapport with someone that you can say, hey, I'm not coping. Come here, please.
Yes, exactly.
Rescue me.
Yeah. Exactly. All right. We're kind of at the end of our time together. Is there another bunch of questions you have or just
I've
one or two?
I've got just three.
Okay.
It leads on now. Okay.
Sure.
So the next one is adapting to doing remote interviews must be hard for you and your guests as human contact and body language is important to develop a rapport. Do you think working remotely as a consequence of COVID has changed your podcasts?
Well, the sock issue has not resurfaced.
Is that the benefit? You don't have to do the laundry.
Yes. I think there are pros and cons, but like you and I have figured out that WhatsApp has a video component. So if I'm an auditory learner, and so I pick up on a lot of energy and the tone and things in the conversation. So I've always been comfortable with the audio part. Now, it's not as important for me to have the person in the room, but it's more important for other people to be in the room or on video. And now I can have the video. But I've been adjusting and I prepare and we practice ahead of time with guests so that, you know, they're comfortable with the format.
With the setup. I mean, I must say when I was talking to you about the interview that I was going to do today with you, I'm a very visual person. And so I like to see the body language of the person I'm working with. The audio kind of goes in and it's, I do understand it, but I pick up more about the energy of the person from the body language. So if you can't see the person to me, I really don't engage in the same way. And I think it's very important to realize that as we adapt to working with the COVID restrictions, that we have to also bear in mind the way that different people operate, whether audio, visual, or feeling. And yeah, it takes a lot of adjustment.
Yeah. How has it affected your practice as a therapist?
As a therapist, it's really boosted my practice because I've always worked online through video conferencing. And where this was originally a bit strange for people, now it's become the norm. People don't want to come and see you, either for their own risk of health or because they now find it comfortable to actually do a video conference from their own home. And a lot of the people that I work with have a lot of anxiety about going out or using public transport. So with this becoming the norm, it's really boosted me.
Excellent.
So I want to ask one last question to you, and that is really, you know, what is the most important message that you feel that small business owners need to hear right now?
Stick with it, get help when you need help, and keep going. Find a way to make things work. Use the tools that you have, and there's lots of people out there who are interested in working with you. You're available. I'm available. Reach out to us. We would really like, we're invested in your success as a human being in life and on a spiritual path, along with really developing yourself as an entrepreneurial leader and a success in your own right and how you define it.
Yeah. That's great. And also to actually run with who you are personally and allow this to actually infiltrate into your business, allow both of them to learn. So learn from your business, learn from your personal life, and put this forward in being somebody in truth.
Right. So. Yes, because you can reinvent yourself as you redesign your business. Dual innovation with mentoring works.
Thank you ever so much for allowing me to interview you. I'm handing the mic back to you, Nancy.
Oh, thanks so much, John. You've been lovely, fantastic, and I'm so glad you didn't roast me.
No, I only wanted to grill tonight, not a roast.
Okay, great. All right. So I've been getting the requests to learn a little bit more about my background. And so there you have it, John Patching. Fantastic job. Thanks for tuning in and listening, and I hope you figured out some tips for yourself. And yeah, I'm going to keep celebrating my 30th year, and thanks Mike Cavea, sound engineer, videographer, mon frère de notre mère, brother from another mother, and we'll see you all next week. Build upon your leadership skills and become effective as a business owner? Do you want to evolve yourself as you redesign your business? You can. We know that dual innovation with mentoring works. We've mentored thousands of emerging to experienced entrepreneurial leaders and small business owners in this dual innovation process since 1992. We are here to co-create a mentoring process where you can nourish resilient relationships while you redesign your business. Resilient relationships promote relational literacy, the ability to understand and express healthy ways of relating. Even a slight increase in relational literacy can lead to significant improvement in all of your relationships. So why not take the risk to move out of dysfunctional relating and move into ways to deepen your connection to yourself and others? Assert self-leadership. If you aren't already subscribed to this podcast, go do it now. Go to wementor.com and get the support and skills needed to build a purposeful life journey with your peers on the entrepreneurial leadership path, consciously co-creating our future. You can also join our virtual mentoring community for one-on-one strategic mentoring or participate in a We Mentor Lab, because we mentor meaningful conversations and activities that lead to higher levels of functionality and engagement in our world and everything that we do with each other. So engage your curiosity and become the leader you envision yourself to be today. wementor.com. Go there. Check it out.